Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey kids, things are a little hectic over here right now. So today, instead of our Melting Stones recap, we're bringing you the secret chat conversation that Indy and I had way back before we started reading this book all together. There will be some swearing. Enjoy!
Hello, welcome to the secret chat. I'm Molly.
I'm Indy.
And you have just finished reading Melting Stones.
Quite literally about 5 minutes ago.
Excellent. Goodwin and Brittany are not here because we have not recorded chapter one yet. So they have maybe read the first chapter. So we're just going to chat about the book. I will admit, the last one of these we did was the one where I was like, let's go. I'm so excited because this is one of my favorite books ever.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be a little more subdued in this one. So, Indy, Melting Stones, thoughts?
Okay. Oh, let's start from the beginning. I'm not going to lie to you. It was so hard to get into this book. To explain why, I'm not a huge fan of stories told in first person.
I've discovered recently that I'm not either.
Some stories are best told that way. Mm-hmm. And I like the stories that are best told that way, but I'm not a huge first person kind of person.
Right.
And so it was so harsh. I read the first chapter like 4 times. It wasn't until we were like, we're recording on this day, that I was like, okay, I gotta get started. And then about chapter 3 or chapter 4, it picked up in a way that I stayed entertained
right. For
the majority of the rest of the book. There were spots that kind of slogged, but I mean, overall, like, definitely not my favorite of the series, but definitely not the worst of the series.
Interesting.
So,
I haven't read it super recently. So, because I've gone back and read, like, maybe the first chapter or two, but I haven't really gotten into the book. It's interesting to hear you talk about it being hard to get into, and it is a different format with it being in first person, and it has like chapter titles. It's weird. It's different. It's very different from her others in the series, but it was also released on audio first, and I have never actually read it. I have only ever listened to it. So I have it on audio and I don't actually own it in paper yet.
Yeah.
And so I'd be interested to hear what you think of the audio. It's possible I've actually read this one even more than Will of the Empress, just because sometimes I need a good audiobook to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while I had about 3 audiobooks and this was one of them. And so I listened to it a lot. I did not have a first person problem, but I think that could very well be because I listened to it on audio. And so I'm literally hearing Evie narrate it. Because okay. I was reading a different book recently that was in first person. I was like, oh, this is why I don't like first person narration. So I think at some level I kind of grew up with a close third though, and I really love a close third. Like,
main source of what I read was written in that close third. I'm old. I don't want to change. But really, like, I was talking to a buddy of mine. I was like, I've got to get started on this stupid thing. I've got to do it. Because I was hanging out with a few friends this weekend. And he's like, but you like Pierce's writing. You know it's a good story. You know the characters. And I'm like, I do. All 3 of those things are absolutely true. But it's told to the first person. And he's like, yeah. Once I got into it, it seemed to go by super quick. There were spots that definitely, it definitely felt like a struggle to get through. But I think that might also be because as relatable as Evie can be at times, we don't have that bond that we do with the other. Like, so if there were, if any of the other 4 stories were told through first person,
right,
I think I would have had an easier time getting through it, if that makes sense.
Right.
Because we do have a strong relationship with them, and we don't have that same, like, rapport with Evie.
Right.
And so, yeah.
Yeah. I do have to say, though, I want to see this book, but, like, Thomas's book from Magic Steps, who has no lines because he's so damn shy. I want his book. Please. We've had Evie's book. Now can we have Thomas's book? I'll also take, like, Pasco's and Nia and Jory's and Kat's. Like, those are all great, too. But,
yeah.
Like, my favorite of the students is the one who, like, isn't really there. One of the things that I do like about Melting Stones is that it feels a little bit like a return to the roots of the series.
Yes.
Because 3 of those first 4 books are about natural disasters. And then we get this, like, murder mysteries and all this political intrigue. And it gets, like, I don't know, Melting Stones just feels so much lighter.
Yeah.
And then it's also, again, about a natural disaster.
Yeah.
So it's like a palate cleanser.
Yeah. Makes me excited for the next one.
Okay, next thing on my list to talk about is Ludo.
Listen, I called it.
You did. Sort you of. Did. Which is why I just cackled hysterically every time you said that.
Listen, that's a smaller version of Ludo.
Yes. That's
essentially what he is.
He's a smaller, less hairy version of Ludo.
Who speaks very eloquently.
Yes. Yeah. In the audio, he has this, like, very deep, it's like the person who plays him has this, like, lovely baritone, and they might use a bit of an echo on him or something, so he sounds very mountainous, which is great.
That's fun. I'll listen to the audiobook at some point.
Yeah.
That might go a little easier.
I don't remember if I cut this out of the final episode, but the last chat that we had with Tortallan Knights, when we talked about, when you mentioned every time you hear Luvo, you think of Ludo from Labyrinth. And one of them was like, well, yeah, Ludo, but a small purple teddy bear rock. So yes, we have all been like, yes, yes, actually he is essentially Ludo. And it's a delight. I like that he calls her Evumeme.
Yes.
He calls her by her full name at all times. I'm curious to know if you caught my catchphrase that I use all the time. Mostly because I say this all the time, and it's a line from Melting Stones, and I've been waiting to see if any of you guys are going to go, wait a minute, doesn't Molly say that when you read it?
Remind me what it is.
Ifs make your head hurt. They're probably bad for your teeth, too.
Yes, I actually highlighted that because I was like, that sounds real familiar. Why does that sound real familiar? But it is one of those things that is highlighted in my book as I was reading along. There are several things in there I'm like, I've got highlighted that I'm just like, this sounds familiar. This sounds familiar.
Yeah, I remember, I think it was in Breyer's book. There's Frostpine says something about like a failure on your part does not constitute an emergency on my part or something like that.
Yeah.
And someone was like, Indy says that.
Yeah.
I'm very excited to see if anybody goes, wait a minute. Holly says that.
When I read it, like, then again, I read it at work and I was kind of like, not necessarily speed reading, but like reading like a chapter and a half and then doing a thing and then reading a chapter and a half and doing things. Unlike Will of the Empress, I didn't read it in 9 hours straight. I read it in probably about 8 hours over the period of 3 days. So this one's a little bit different even in just how it was read.
Right, for sure. When we were talking during the predictions about what Disney movie or what movies this is, we came up with like CSI and Muppet Treasure Island and Mulan. And I was like, there's another Disney movie that I thought you guys were going to call and nobody did.
Moana.
Yeah.
Like, I got about halfway through it. My brain's just like, return the...
Right. So I very much did not want to say volcano in the three words, especially because Goodwin has been talking about volcanoes since season 3.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to give it away. And just, I want him to be excited when he goes, it's a volcano. And he finally gets his volcano. Yeah. So I had to think for long and hard about what three words I was going to use for this. And then I finally came up with was Island Destruction Investigation. And I came up with those three words and I went, that's the plot of Moana in three words.
Yeah.
That's literally what she's doing. And then nobody said Moana. And I was like, well, I can't say Moana because that's going to give away the volcano. Any favorite new characters?
Oswin. I like me a good solid dad character. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I like me a good solid dad.
We got Tirad. We got I already forgot his name from The Will of the Empress. I'm about to say Antino, and that's Keth's cousin in Shatterglass. We've got him too. We've got Colin Matazzi.
Yeah.
We've got Ambrose. Ambrose is his name.
I was like, God, it's on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah. Oswin. Yeah.
I like being a good solid dad.
I do have to say, like, as much as it takes a while for like parents, aside from Lark and Rosethorn, to show up in this series, once they do,
they're solid.
They're so wonderful. As a writer, I actually have to think about like one of the things that I've said to people before is like all of my characters get parents who love them. I don't guarantee how long you'll have them.
But
all of my characters have incredibly loving parents. I have to wonder if that came from reading this series.
That's highly probable. You kind of know this about me, but like our listeners don't know a whole lot about this. Genuinely, any tabletop character that I make has a great relationship with one, if not both, of their parents. I don't do dead orphaned children, except for Dundar. Dundar does not count. Dundar was presented to me in a way, and I went, I know what I'm doing with you.
As a general rule.
But like for the most part, one character has a phenomenal relationship with her dad and her uncle. Mom's gone, doesn't know where she is, but that's okay. She doesn't really care. The one I'm currently working on has a great relationship with his entire village. They have that very strong belief of it takes a village to raise a child.
Yeah. So
everybody raises all of the kids. Has nice. A great relationship with all of them. Previous characters, Tim. Tim has phenomenal relationship with his parents. Her parents. Their parents. What is Tim?
You created Tim, so I guess it's kind of up to you.
But like even the Taking Tree, we have to assume coming from a grove.
Yeah.
There is a symbiotic relationship with all of the trees. Like we know that right. from actual real nature.
Right, right.
Is a symbiotic relationship between all trees. And so I imagine had a great relationship with the trees around it.
That's why Kalara and the Taking Tree are such good friends.
Yeah. See? Look.
We will be friends now.
Not a tragic backstory, kind of, but that's what makes a Spite Revenant is death.
Right.
So like unintentional tragic backstory. The tiefling kind of has one, but it doesn't come into play while playing her. Like, she's like, whatever, it happened, let's go.
Yeah.
And then her bestie is just like, let's go, all the time. Like, there is no button.
I find this really interesting because my characters often have tragic backstories. I mean, look at my novel has 5 protagonists, 3 of whom are orphans. One of whom is orphaned in chapter 1 of the book in a very violent, horrific manner.
Yeah.
But I have also recently discovered that I really like writing about grief. So apparently this is just what I do.
Yeah.
Are there any characters that you don't like?
Honestly, not a fan of Nori. I understand that I'm not like gonna be like a dick about it, but definitely not a character I much care for. The other one I do really like, because we kind of got one a little bit, is
yeah, for sure.
The head lady.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Loved her. She was interesting.
I think Nori kind of reminds me a little bit of Nani from Lilo and Stitch.
Yeah, I can definitely see it. Also, we were talking about dead kids. Or dead parents. Not dead kids. Not dead kids. Not dead parents.
Only dead parents. No dead children.
We have a
quote. Draw the line.
In one of our D&D servers.
Oh. And
I think between the 5 of us, we have 3 dads, 2 or 3 moms, 2 grandpas, a grandma, an uncle, and a bitch grandmother.
Yeah.
So
that's I'd apparently get on kids. With these people. I'd get on with these people.
You'd like Mihail. I don't know how much you would like the rest of it.
Okay, good to know.
That said, I do love my D&D group. You would get along with the people. The characters could
be. Oh, no, that's what I was thinking, was I'd get on with these people if they apparently created characters that, you know.
You can cut this out. Last night, we played, and let me tell you, Mihail, bitch-smacked a motherfucker, and then bit him, and then got really pissed off when she couldn't go back and stabilize him so he wouldn't die.
So what I'm getting from this character is Sandry.
Oh my god.
Mostly when you said bite, like from now on, when people bite people, I just think of Sandry.
No, but you're not wrong.
See, this is the new world that I live in.
Down to the uncle that she's like, how could you do this to me? Means I have to make the rest of the kids. God damn.
I was gonna say, this is your character, right? Yeah. Well, see, this is the world that I now live in. Since I have spent the last 3 years like living in the Circle of Magic. Archetypes? What are archetypes? There are four archetypes. Their names are Sandry, Triss, Briar, and Dasha. I mean, to be fair, there's a few more archetypes than that. There's also Rose, Thorn, and Lark, which is like an archetype in and of it. Like, they're not separate. It's Rose, Thorn, and Lark is an archetype. It's funny because like I'm around you guys and it's always the obligatory Animorphs reference. And yeah. Then I go to synagogue and it's always the obligatory Northern Exposure reference. So like people know that I live in these fandoms and that I'm always talking about them. But the fandom that I'm like living in the most is actually this one. But I think the characters who always stood out in my mind the most are, I can't remember his name, but the like boy who meets them at the beginning.
Yep.
Yes, him. I was like, I'll know his name if I hear it, but I can't remember his name. Like, I don't have specific things about them that I like, oh, this is why I like this character or don't like this character or whatever. It's just like the three characters that stand out the most in my head are him and then Flame and Carnelian. Which
yeah.
For them, it's probably because they're like these weird volcano spirits.
Yeah. We also get to spend a lot of time with them.
Yeah.
And they're half of the driving force of this story. So yeah, no, I 100% agree. Like, they're really well-written characters.
They're a lot of fun. So, speaking of PTSD, not at all speaking of PTSD, but I feel like this is something we should talk about. Because we get this with Briar in The Will of the Empress, but then we have it kind of repeated with Evie. And we kind of learn more about the war and everything that she's been through.
I think it was mentioned when we did the excerpt, but I can't remember. Finding out that this takes place at the same time makes it more interesting to me, because we see how Evie and Rose Thorn kind of deal with all of that, and we get to see Briar dealing with it on his own, because Rose Thorn and Evie went through it together.
Right.
I mean, even so far as to have Luvo.
Briar just needed to take Luvo with him.
Yeah, right. But so it kind of definitely shows the difference between how someone spirals without a network.
Yeah.
And how, I won't say easier, but like how much understanding comes from having a group of people who get it.
You said, I won't say easier, and I was going to hazard to say maybe healthier.
In some cases, I would definitely say so.
Yeah. I was going to say, I don't feel like that would be safe to like use as a blanket term, but
yeah. We also get to see what trauma bonding does. Like, because we don't get to see how Briar fits into the whole thing.
Right.
When we just read Will of the Empress. And, like, the four kids have gone through enough trauma bonding to last anybody a lifetime.
Right.
Before we even got to, like, we see how protective Evie is of Rose Thorn. Some of the conversations that take place are just ow.
Yeah.
Seeing a different form of trauma bonding is an interesting choice, I feel.
Yeah.
Because not a lot of people address that, really.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's a thing that happens quite often.
Yeah.
It's, you have people who go through incredibly traumatic events with someone, and they shouldn't mesh on good days.
Because to make the obligatory Animorphs reference, this is how I feel about Marco and Tobias specifically. Minds at Yerk likes to harp on how Marco and Tobias are definitely not friends, and I'm like, I don't know how closely you're reading these books, because there's a lot where they just banter.
Yeah.
But if they were not in a war together, that probably wouldn't have happened.
No, highly doubt it.
On that note of trauma bonding, I think that this is one of the reasons that Evie is such a favorite among the students. When we asked, like, who's your favorite of the students, a lot of people said Evie. And I think that this is part of it, is that, like you said, we've seen the four kids get close, and then we also see Briar and Evie and Rose Thorn get close in this same way.
Yeah.
I would honestly hazard to say we see the same kind of thing happening with Triss and Kef in Shatterglass. I think on a smaller scale, but it's there.
I was going to make a comment of, we don't really see it in, you know, Street Magic. I mean, we get introduced to Evie, we learn a little bit about her. We kind of get an introduction to her, but we don't really get to know. That being said, I think another one of the reasons why she might be a favorite is she's all four of those kids.
Hmm. Okay.
She is all four of them rolled into one.
I can see that for sure, yeah.
Briar Street Smarts.
Triss's love of learning.
Yeah. She doesn't have Dodge's patience, but she has Dodge's, like, tenacity, I think is a good way to put it. It's not quite like Sandry's stubbornness, though she does at one point say, if I do get brought back, I'd like to come back as a mule, which is what made me start, like, connecting the dots.
Okay, yeah.
But it's more of a Dodge-style stubbornness than a Sandry. And Sandry's love for animals, and after this, love for people.
Yeah.
Once you get towards, like, after everything goes down, she kind of gets this realization that she does love people. Only certain, but she does love people.
On that note, I feel like I have to ask how much you relate to Evie. Because I feel like there's like an indiness to that.
I want to phrase this as, there's a lot of this that, like, a lot of her that reminds me of when I was younger. Maybe not so much now, but, like, if I had read this book at 15, like, I would be angry that someone compared me to Evie. But, like, in the same way that, like, at 22 being compared to Yang from Ruby just made me angry. There's a truth to it. You're not wrong, but shut the fuck up. If I was younger and I read this book, I would feel a lot of draw to it.
I didn't think about it until you framed it that way, but that arc that Evie goes through of, like, kind of learning to care about people, I was like, this sounds like something Indy has said about themselves. So
Like, when I was young, I liked people, and then about five, there's reasons why, but, like, my biological mother said it was overnight, I became the angriest child she had ever met, and I stayed that way. And, like, at that point, I was like, fuck people, they just disappoint you.
I mean, that's pretty much Evie's attitude.
Yeah. And so, like I said, if I was younger,
yeah,
I would definitely see that kind of, I would feel that bond, but like as I am now, I'm not who I was at 15. So there's the recognition of that was like me, but yeah. Now,
well, growth. Yeah. But the other thing I was going to say is, well, she was 14. So maybe this is kind of how you were when you were, say, 14.
Yeah, that's like I said, I can recognize the similarities between her and my younger self. I feel like I'm slowly becoming more like Rose Thorne.
Yeah, see, I just had this thought of, well, if you were like Evie when you were 14, does this mean that when Evie is in her 30s, that I'm talking to an approximation of 30-year-old Evie?
Maybe.
Is she going to be like you in her 30s?
Well, okay, so big thing. I want to talk about this because I think it's neat. The whole conversation between Evie and Rose Thorne, I promise this is related to what we were talking about.
It doesn't have to be. It's fine.
The original conversation of there are two types of people, creators.
I mean, that was the next thing I was going to get to anyway. So, hey.
Evie being like, no, I want to be a creator. That's what I want to do. I want to help people.
Yeah.
And then Rose Thorne just like fucking cutting her deep by saying, you know, that I didn't say that the first step to being a destroyer wasn't going to hurt. And then Evie ultimately being like going to dedicate herself to the temple. There's a conversation somewhere in the mix of that where, and we get snippets of this throughout the other books, mm-hmm. in relation to Rose Thorne. She's not a people person.
Right.
And caring for people doesn't come easy.
Right.
But she does it because that's what was right.
Right.
From personal experience, that's kind of how it went down for me. It's hard to give a shit about people. I don't like people having to teach yourself to give a shit about someone. We kind of see that branch into Evie taking a page out of Rose Thorne's book to start making those steps. So I don't necessarily think that you're wrong in the sense that I think Evie is going to be a lot more like Rose Thorne than she will be like Lark.
Yeah.
And that all has to do with who you're raised by.
Mm-hmm.
And we see her, and we know that Rose Thorne and Evie have, I won't say a stronger relationship because we don't see her with Lark. So we don't quite know how that goes.
I would hazard to say they have a stronger relationship. They've certainly known each other for a longer period of time.
Yeah. See, that's what I was going to say.
And they went through a war together.
So they've trauma bonded.
Exactly.
And that does a lot for a relationship, just from any standpoint. I feel like Rose Thorne is a heavier influence than mm-hmm. Lark. Mm-hmm. Like, I have my beliefs about Evie's relationship between Rose Thorne and Lark, but we don't see it, so I don't know for certain. But Rose Thorne is a heavier influence, and I feel like that is obvious.
I like the idea that Evie eventually takes over Discipline Cottage.
I can see it.
And raises the next generation of traumatized children.
I can see it, like 100%.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast. And up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
It has been a while since I read this book, so I don't really remember the ins and outs of this ending. But I know that somewhere on the internets, I ran across some comments about how Evie's powers seem to go off the deep end in this book.
Yeah.
And I was going to ask how you feel about that. Even though I don't really remember.
Let me see if I can phrase this in a way that doesn't sound completely nutto. We get used to the four kids having strong magics, and they're capable of doing amazing things.
Yeah.
Nobody is used to Triss.
Right.
And I feel that Evie kind of, while is stuck within one specific type of element, has that fantastical quality of Triss's magic. With the ending is that, you know, Luvo gives her so much of his magic, but I feel like we as readers got used to that 10-year-old in the first quartet who is capable of doing things. It's like dropping any of those four as the full-fledged mages where they are at 18 into a 14-year-old body. Mm. Like, that's what it makes me think of. And so, like, there's definitely a lot there, and I don't know how much of it is actually influenced by... Okay, so, like, if you heat metal and then cool it down, it becomes harder.
Right.
Like, it becomes stronger, right? Okay, so it takes a lot of force and pressure to make these rocks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of heat and a lot of cooling and more heat and more cooling. And so, like, stones are meant to be sturdy. Like yeah. That's just what they are. And I feel like half the reason why Evie's powers get so insane is not only because of Luvo, but because of her proximity to all of the creatures under the mountain. The place itself, like, we see that there are essentially ley lines where all of this power is, like, dredged up, and it's all marked by stone. She pulls her magic from that stone. So, like, I feel that there is a logical reason for it to get so big.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's like Triss. If Triss only dealt with one specific element.
Right.
Also, that reveal, like,
you're gonna have to remind me.
Sorry, mother being the pirate queen.
What?
It says that Nori's mother was the pirate queen.
Nori's mother. I missed Trim's mother.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
That reveal. Sorry, though, that was.
No, that's legit. I don't remember that part, but that's okay. It's not really a spoiler because I've read it already. I've just forgotten.
Yeah. No, it's kind of just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, my mother was a pirate queen who was murdered or something. I don't remember exactly what it was. I have it highlighted.
But you're like, wait a minute.
And I, like, pirate queen, and I went, oh, I get that reference.
Dear Triss, don't go to the Battle Islands. You talked about Evie being sturdy, and I think maybe that's, like, what, because you said, you know, Evie's kind of the four kids rolled into one. I would argue that she has Daja's sturdiness.
Yeah.
And then in regards, like, since we're talking about, like, magic and strong magic, one of the things that I remember from this book is we're so used to Winding Circle, the magic in Winding Circle. And then Evie gives us this glimpse of, yeah, like, for the average Joe, magic is this, like, very time-consuming, labor-intensive process. And it wasn't until I met Rosethorn and Briar that it happened at the pace of, here you go.
Yeah. It made what's his face?
Yarin? Stone Slicer?
No. It made, like, just the regular mages seem more human.
Right.
We have dealt with for 10 books now essentially superhumans.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't see a lot of just people being people, really. Especially, like, mages just being mages.
Right.
Without all of the ambient magic.
Like, looking back on it, I feel like we do see these characters, but they're not put into that perspective, right?
Yeah.
Yarin in Daja's book.
Yeah.
Is probably less of a superhuman, which is why he's constantly trying to, like, show how he's better than Miko. Probably Jubahuba is that way, which is why he doesn't, because he talks about how he's intimidated by Evie. He's probably more of just an average Joe sort of mage.
Yeah. I love the summary of everything, including Jubahuba.
Jubahuba is, like, one of the best nicknames.
Yeah.
And then honestly, I think Dama in Shatterglass probably fits into that.
Yeah.
Because we don't see him doing a lot of magic, and some of the magic we do see him doing literally blows up in his face.
Yeah.
So
can we just talk about Evie almost breaking a man's whole face?
Yeah, that's absolutely what we're here for. You just have to remind me because I don't remember this book quite as well as Will the Empress.
Oh, well, it's like it's in the first chapter when they're
when Murtide tries to get her off of the railing and she is ready to throw hands.
Like, yeah. She fucking hits a motherfucker. She broke my nose. No, it's not broken. Shut the what? Fuck.
I was going to say, what I like about that scene is Rose Thorne's reaction.
Yeah.
Because she actually
told you don't touch her.
Right, right. She doesn't chastise Evie about it.
I mean, she does in private, but.
Yeah. But even then, I feel like she's like, hey, that reminds me, like, the way Rose Thorne handles that situation reminds me of the way Gorse handles the Briar situation back in Chris's book, where he like chews out the guy and then tells Briar, hey, chill out. Don't go breaking people's thumbs. I need them.
I need them.
And so just like, Evie, you're going to have to figure out how to work with people. But I love that she just chews Murtide out. And she's like, I told you,
don't touch her. And what did you do? You touched her. You deserve this. This is your fault. Come on, let me fix it. That is the whole Rose Thorne conversation. You did this to yourself. You're a fucking idiot. Let's go get you patched up.
I feel like we should talk about Murtide then. He's the other character I remember really well. Doesn't she have a name for him?
Fusspot.
I was like, I know it's not like based on the name of his, on the sound of his name, the way Chupa Hooba is. Just remember that she has a nickname for him. Yeah, Dedicate Fusspot.
Dedicate Fusspot. Which is like, when I read it the first couple of times, I was like, that's an interesting name to choose. I mean, I'm not judging, but that's a weird name to choose. And then it was like, oh, that's not his actual name. This makes so much more sense. I'm trying to shed my
For some reason, the concept of someone selecting.
Specifically selecting Fusspot. And I'm like, I'm not judging you, man, but... were all the other taken? Like, how and why?
Apparently I have needed this conversation because I feel like that was way funnier than it should have been.
Yeah, like I said, when I first saw that, I was like, bruh, are you okay? That's a choice. You chose this. No forced you to have this name. Like,
it's like in Robin Hood Men in Tights, the witch's name is Latrine.
Yeah.
And there's a conversation, I think, between her and the sheriff where he's like, interesting name, Latrine. How did you come by it? And she says, oh, we changed it in such and such a year. Wait, you changed it to Latrine? And she says, yeah, used to be shithouse. It's a good change.
It is a good change.
So, you know, maybe Dedicate Fusspot, just a really terrible name to begin with.
Like, I mean, they do say that the mage name you choose is a reflection upon yourself. So, I guess.
But yeah, I feel like he has a nice little arc in this story.
Yeah.
That's all of the things that I wrote down that I specifically thought of to talk about.
Yeah.
Do you have other specific things that you just have dying to get off of your chest?
I was gonna say, there's a couple of things that, like, I really liked. It's really tight, clean writing as usual, which is why I was kind of upset with myself for taking so long to get into it. You know what I mean? It's definitely one of those of... This is just a great show of Pierce's writing and that versatility that she has.
Yeah.
Because it does take a lot to switch from third person to first and first to third person. Like, it takes a lot of effort to actively do that. So, like, it just shows a real good chunk of versatility there. The story is very reminiscent to that of the first four, whereas you go to a place that's having issues, specifically Briar and Dasha's book, where there are issues that are already there, mm-hmm. and it's just getting worse as things go by, which you said earlier is really nice palate cleanser. And I wholeheartedly agree. It's very nice to kind of see that, not necessarily back to the roots, but definitely something root adjacent.
Yeah.
Not calling Evie a mushroom by any stretch of the information, imagination, but you know that fungal network between root systems, that's what I feel this is. It's connecting the two.
I can see that.
Going back to more tree analogies.
Evie would be mildly annoyed by this.
This is what I do. I like the first person limited a lot.
Mm-hmm.
As far as storytelling goes, I think that is honestly the best way to handle first person. There are some first persons that are essentially first person omniscient. No, thank you. I don't want those. Take them away. Jail for 1,000 years. That ending though, where she goes back and diverts the volcano and then finds her way back to the three, because that was her whole purpose in leaving the boat,
mm-hmm.
was to go back. Nori making a comment, and Evie's pretty much just because she's like, I know Rosethorn, she doesn't. Rosethorn's mm-hmm. coming back. I really like that. We see the moment it happens in the first book where Rosethorn and Briar click.
Yeah.
Where Briar's this is home. I'm safe here. I don't have to worry. Rosethorn is mom.
Yeah.
It's here that we see Evie have that same realization. And I really like that. That's a nice callback and a nice touch. Also, the fucking cats made me cry. Mm-hmm. That was what took me so long to get, was because I had to cry.
Mm-hmm.
Having just lost Sebastian. And
I didn't even think of that.
I was literally talking about it earlier today, that I wanted to kind of start volunteering at one of the animal shelters, specifically socializing cats. And then I read that, and
I'm sorry. Yeah,
that's what took me so long. So when I was I'll be on in a few, I was it's fine. I'm going to pull myself together. And then nope.
I'm sorry. I wish I had thought of that, because I knew that was coming and it didn't put two and two together. Oh wait, this is going to be especially difficult.
Yeah.
At this moment.
I keep saying I don't want another cat. I'm not bringing another animal into this house right now. It's not that I never want another cat. It's I don't want another cat right now.
Right. I mean, Evie is literally going through that same thing.
Yeah. And so that's why it hit the way it hit, was because I'm dealing with that part myself.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, in our conversation with Tortallan Knights, I'm pretty sure everybody missed this, because it was sort of between, it was kind of a really fast thing between me and Joan, or me and Rebecca, but I was talking about how I almost called him Daja. What's his name? Goodwin. So it's about how Dasha's favorite characters, about how Goodwin's favorite characters in each quartet seem to be the non-human characters. His favorite characters in the first four books, he was my favorite character is Briar's little tree. In the next four, he's I love the sassy glass dragon. And I was
Luvo.
Goodwin's favorite character in these last three books is going to be Luvo. One of them is yeah, or the cats, and then pauses and goes, oh no, not the cats. It's yeah, not the cats.
I remember that being said. And I didn't quite get it. I know that reading The Will of the Empress, I think I was mentally prepared to find out that all the cats were dead, mm-hmm. because there were no mentions of cats.
Mm-hmm.
When she shows up at discipline.
Right.
And I was like, oh. But like, you don't get time to dwell on that or like right. really focus on that. You don't get right. any time to really focus on what the fuck is a Luvo. You know, like, yeah. you know what I like.
And the what the fuck is a Luvo kind of distracts from the fact that there are no cats. Otherwise, you would definitely notice because there's a dog in that house.
Yeah.
There is a big ass, like, Great Pyrenees fluffer dog.
Yeah. Yeah. I noticed that and I was like, because I noticed that in Will of the Empress. And so it wasn't so much a surprise when it's mentioned that, mm-hmm. you know, all of them were lost. Because it wasn't necessarily a surprise, it didn't really. How do I phrase this without sounding heartless? It was easier to forget that those were a thing mm-hmm. unless that they were actively brought up. And they're brought up like twice.
Yeah.
But so like it was kind of that easier, you know, out of sight, out of mind, which makes it less hard for what Ebby is going through. Like if you don't think about the cats, you don't think of how traumatic everything has been. For Ebby.
Right.
All she had were those cats. Mm-hmm. And she lost every single one of them. If you don't think about it, you know that she's traumatized. You know she's been through a war. You know that a lot has happened. But then when you add in the cats.
She lost her family.
Yeah. And so like that's one of the reasons why, like, in Will of the Empress, when I read that, I was already prepared. But the ending where, you know, the cat just, you know, had kittens, Nori said I could keep one. Do you want one? And Ebby being like, well, I think it might be about time to. That broke my heart. I watched a video a few days ago. I don't know why I do this. I really don't. But it was a video that was essentially like, humans, when they die, they leave a will. When I die. Like, or if I could leave a will, when I die, I would give my favorite bed to the next dog that comes in.
Aww.
I would give them my favorite toy. Always have something to do. I would give them my human's lap and all of their love. When you say that you will never get another dog, it breaks my heart because you have so much love to give.
And this is where Indy makes Molly cry.
Yeah. And so like reading that specifically, having also watched that video and having lost literally the reason I wake up every morning mm-hmm. just hit really hard. I'm starting to tear up now. mm-hmm. Though earlier there was just gross sobbing. I mean, it was bad.
I know it happened to you most recently. But I realize all of us have lost cats like in the last year or two.
Yeah.
And so this is going to be hard. Like when we get to that part, it's going to be really hard on everyone.
I wonder how long it's going to take everybody else to notice. Because again, I noticed in Will of the Empress.
Right.
But I wonder how long it's going to take for Goodwin and Brittany to put two and two together.
I think Brittany's going to figure it out pretty quickly.
Oh yeah.
I think first or second chapter she's going to go, where are the cats?
I don't remember when it's mentioned, but it does mention that the cats died.
Yeah.
So
I'm curious to see how long it takes Goodwin to figure out it's a volcano.
Yeah, right. I feel like that's going to be a little early too though.
Yeah.
There's a lot of hinting towards it. It doesn't come right out and say it until like halfway yeah. through, but
they also mentioned volcano in predictions.
Yeah.
I think he's gonna figure it out pretty quickly, but I would love for him not to figure it out, and then when it comes out he's like, volcano, I get my volcano. But I don't think that's how it's gonna play out. I think he's gonna be like, there's a volcano, it's a volcano.
And then
it's gonna happen.
But yeah.
And then I'm going to sing Moana.
Make way. Anyway.
How did you feel about chapter titles?
I didn't much pay attention to them, to be honest with you.
I mean, fair.
I usually don't.
Yeah, I think I'm the same way. I honestly don't remember if Battle Magic has chapter titles. So we'll find out when we get there. You know who I want to see? Like I said, you know, this is like the Evie, the Return to the Roots Evie book. Mm-hmm. And I want that for Camus. You know who else I want to Return to the Roots book for?
Me.
Kirill.
That would be so much fun.
I want the Circle of Magic Kirill book.
Yes, absolutely.
And I feel like, because it doesn't specify whether or not Kirill has magic. If he does, I think he's, again, one of those, like, everyday mage people.
Yeah.
Which I think is perfectly fine for him, but it would also explain why he's like, the fuck is up with this 10-year-old?
Yeah.
That's right, Brittany. I still never forgiven you. I never really paid him all that much mind. I thought that him and Daja and Frostpine made this cute little forge family.
Yeah.
But aside from that, I never paid him all that much mind until Brittany just like absolutely hated him. And I'm like, right? I'm here. You will be my friend. I will care for you. Anything else?
Nothing I can really think of. Like, I think we covered the big highlights. And if not, well, it's not like we don't go through this book every week. So.
Right, right. Well, there it is. You've had Indy's
take.
Indy's first reactions.
Yeah, and I kind of feel bad that I didn't send you the messages and gifts that I sent last time.
Yeah.
But like, the way I was reading it, when I read Will of the Empress, I literally was doing nothing else.
Right.
And so, like, it made sense where in 5 minutes you got something.
Yeah.
But
I also, like, Will of the Empress was the book that had one or two things that I was very specifically looking forward to you seeing and getting your reaction. And I wanted to know your immediate reaction. This book, there wasn't anything in particular that I was like, oh, I can't wait to hear Indy's reaction on heavy punching Dedicate Fuss Spot in the face.
He deserved it. He's an idiot. Rosethorn fucking told him. Evie fucking told him he should know better. But no.
We are going to have this conversation when we get to chapter one as a whole, but there's a lot to be said there about the way we treat children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, like that whole, like we'll save the majority of this for later, but no, that whole comment of, I went through a war. You respect me. She went through the same fucking thing. And you think it's okay to start snatching her up. Nah, Batman. That's not going to happen. That's not going to fly. I'm surprised Rosethorn didn't fucking hit him too.
Well, she's got a little more self-control than Evie.
That's fair.
That's the difference between 14-year-old Evie and 30-year-old Evie, or in this case, 40, 50-year-old Evie. Rosethorn's like
45, mid-40s.
Somewhere in there. Because at some point we get I don't remember if we get an exact age or like a rough age, but in we know she's like in her 30s.
In this one.
Daja's book.
Yeah, in this one, it says he wasn't old, younger than Rosethorn in her mid-40s, I think. Or in her 40s, I think is what it said.
Well, that would make sense. Like, if she's in her 30s in Daja's book, and it's been 8 years. And we, right now, are looking forward to getting to read this with Brittany and Goodwin and getting to see all their reactions. And you, audience, will be looking forward to our foray into Battle Magic.
Yay.
Which will be the final book of this series.
Reading Circle Temple is produced by us, Molly,
Brittany,
Indy,
and Goodwin.
If you like the show, tell your friends about us.
If you don't like the show, tell your enemies.
You can also help people find us by leaving a rate and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
Find all our episodes at our new home on Acast, shows.acast.com/readingcircletemple.
Shake it us. We'd love to hear from you.
send us an email at templeofreadingcircle@gmail.com.
You can also follow Reading Circle Temple on Instagram, Tumblr, and Facebook. And you can join our Reading Circle Temple Facebook group.
To find us on Twitter, tweet at Reading Temple.
A special thanks to Yellow is for Happy for our artwork. You can find more of their art by following Yellow is for Happy Draws on Tumblr and Shannon Ann Draws on Instagram.
Another special thanks to Brittany's brother, Thomas Dick, for our theme music. You can find more of his music by following Thomas Dick on SoundCloud.
Thanks to Tamara Pierce for writing The Circle of Magic, and thanks to you for listening.
Let's all have coffee next week.
I'm just gonna cut that, so like I have how do you feel about relating to Evie, and it's just gonna say there's a truth to it, you're not wrong, but shut the fuck up.
Yeah, that's fine.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.